Case number 19-1240, Nuclear Energy Institute petitioner versus U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission and United States of America. Mr. Crowley for the petitioner, Mr. Averback for the respondents.
You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court. Stephen Crowley on behalf of the petitioner, the Nuclear Energy Institute. I've asked to reserve 2 minutes of my time. Judge Millett, Judge Pillar, Judge Ginsburg, this is a straightforward case in light of 3 points that I think I can state very briefly. Point one, the Atomic Energy Act allows the NRC to enter into agreements with states whereby state regulators, instead of the commission, regulate land disposal of very low-level nuclear waste. When the NRC discontinues its regulatory authority in this way, and discontinues is the word the act uses, the state, now called an agreement state, becomes the regulator, and the commission disavows authority over matters within the scope of such an agreement. Point two, many years ago, NEI's members obtained approval for their disposal of low-level waste from agreement states under the auspices of these agreements entered into between those states and the NRC. Until 2018, these members in places like Texas, Arizona, Washington State, had no reason to doubt their state's regulatory authority over their land disposal of low-level waste. And third and finally, in fact, these members had every reason to believe that their approvals from their agreement states governed the disposal of their waste. And here's why. Once the NRC discontinues regulatory authority through an agreement state agreement, it can reclaim or claw back that authority only by a rule, regulation, or order. That language, rule, regulation, or order, also are the words that the Act uses, and those words are echoed in the AEA's implementing regulations as well.
But what about 20.2002, which was on the books the entire time, and which clearly seemed to speak to what the NRC is now referring to as a kind of bifurcated responsibility, the responsibility of the generator of the waste to get approval for sending it, and the responsibility of the disposal facility as a disposal facility, which is regulated by, in their view, by the agreement state. And 2002 seems to speak only to the former, and it has been consistently on the books.
So 2002 is not relevant to the regulatory framework that we're discussing, Your Honor. And here's why. 2002 is a sibling regulation, a companion of 10 CFR 150.10. It is that pathway, 10 CFR 150.10, that is the regulatory framework for agreement state agreements. And that's why the government consistently and correctly refers to or agreement state equivalents or agreement state equivalents to 2002. 2002 provides for disposal where disposal is not otherwise provided for in this chapter, but disposal is otherwise provided for in this chapter. That is chapter one that governs the AEA through 150.10 and 150.15.
Well, and this is a sort of fundamental difficulty that I have as between your argument and the government's argument, which is that you persistently describe disposal as one thing, and the government is describing two different actions, that the generator has an obligation to, you know, package and transport, and that, you know, there's a getting it to the dump, if you will.
Okay.
And that, you know, as I read their understanding, is that then the dump, and whether the dump is like a safe place, and whether it's supervised, and whether it's leaking, and whether it's, you know, off behind somebody's, you know, country house or whatever.
Sure.
You know, so, and I just, you, it feels like your ship's passing in the night on that issue.
I don't think so, Judge Miller. It's an important question, so thank you for it. And I want to be clear what our argument is. So our argument is the NRC. We don't have a quarrel with much of with much of the government's position, just the core of its position. Okay, we recognize we don't argue that the NRC has jurisdiction over the packaging of low-level waste, the handling of it, the storage of it, the transportation of it. What it doesn't have is regulatory jurisdiction over putting the waste in the hole. That they have given up. They have given that up by entering into agreement state agreements. There is and was a robust process for entering into those agreements. They are posted, you know, in the Federal Register, public comment is invited, state regulators understand that they have authority. So we're not, with respect to, again, packaging, transportation, handling, that is NRC jurisdiction, always has been, always will be. But with respect to disposal at the site, again, you know, turning the shovel over into the hole, that is the domain of state regulation, because so says the AEA and the agreements, state agreements the government has entered into.
I just want to clarify, your argument is limited to in-state disposal?
Yes. Importantly, it's limited to in-state disposal. Yes. So it's a different ball game if we're talking about interstate disposal, and that gets a little more complicated. And the NRC has provided guidance on various scenarios if I'm taking disposal from one state to another state. We're talking here and as relevant to, again, Arizona and Texas, and of course it was the enforcement action intrastate disposal in Texas that prompted this case.
Except that the documents that are referred to going back to 86, 2012, 2016, 2018, 19, none of those are actually making that distinction, except in specific examples. But in terms of the regime is one that I think from NRC's perspective applies to intra and interstate.
We would respectfully disagree with that, Your Honor. I mean, I'll let the NRC speak for itself, but just to back up a second, we have a framework that says states can approve of land disposal of low-level waste, right? That comes from the face of the act, provided that the state regulators enter into an agreement with the NRC and vice versa. And again, when that happens, you know, there is a robust process to ensure that state regulation is up to snuff. What happened in 2012, as you mentioned, this document is because it was not crystal clear what is required in the multi-state scenarios, the NRC issued what it called a clarification letter, a clarification, not a disavowal of the AEA's framework. It wouldn't have had authority to disavow the AEA's framework, but a clarification letter that spoke to different scenarios. Again, it gets a little complicated on the math, but depending on, you know, whether I'm in an agreement state or I'm not, and I'm disposing in an agreement state or not, we have no quarrel with the 2012 document that the court refers to. Likewise, we have no quarrel with the 2016 document that memorializes that clarification. Our beef is with the longstanding authority of states to approve of disposal within their states. And you know, even in 2012, when the NRC renewed Washington State's approval authority, right, it did so recognizing the state's authority in this way. That's at Addendum 9.
You say you have no trouble with the 2016 regulatory issue summary, but had no reason to think that there was a change of position until 2019. But yes, in 2016, the commission clearly said that it was superseding the 1986 information notice. And, you know, part of your quibble is that there was no notice and comment rulemaking, but that ship has sailed. So, you know, as you're well aware, one of the questions is the timeliness question of any challenge, given the clarity of the statement. And I understand your position that it was unlawful for various procedural and substantive reasons. Yes. But given the clarity of the 2016 statement, and, you know, why has that ship not sailed?
Yes, thank you for the question. No, we strongly disagree that this was clear, and I want to say why. It's important here to focus both on the words on the page and the context in which this document was issued. So at JA 16, this regulatory issue summary makes clear that there was an incorrect statement in the 1986 information. And that is a true statement. There was an incorrect statement. What was the incorrect statement? It was a global statement that states always have approval over land disposal of low-level waste. And what this clarification that is referred to in JA 16, also JA 17, is to say that was an oversimplification. The commission is saying we want to correct that oversimplification, that overbroad statement, and we're correcting that by explaining that in a multi-state scenario, again, this is the language that's important at the top of JA 17, matters are different. And we acknowledge that we had no problem with that. Of course, the same document is very clear-throated that it does not constitute a departure from the regulatory framework. It says that in JA 18. It says there's no notice and comment. We're not doing a backfit. We're not publishing it in the Federal Register. Nothing here to see. I see that my time's about to end.
You may continue.
Right. To put it differently, imagine had we tried to, and we didn't have a beef with it, so we wouldn't have, but imagine hypothetically that NEI, you know, sought to challenge this document, we wouldn't have been able to challenge it. Why? It says it is simply memorializing the status quo. It is not changing the regulatory status quo. It doesn't require anything of licensees. Well,
you're a better lawyer than that. You don't take that at face value. If an agency says that and it's not the case, you would take it up and say, that's not the case.
Well,
they want to say nothing to see here, but that may be part of what you would challenge.
But Your Honor, there's no reason to think this wasn't the case. This on the face of it makes sense with the regime. Again, the NRC knows about these agreements, right? It knows what state regulators are doing. It knows that NEI members are disposing pursuant of state authority. Right. Under the AEA, if it's going to do something dramatically different, it has to say, okay, what should have this document said? It should have said, we are hereby amending 150.10. We are hereby changing the wording of 150.15. We're changing the wording of 2002. But our position is there's a clear way to read this document consistent with those regulations as they are worded then and now.
Well, so what about one way of reading them saying no backfit needed, strictly voluntary, this just ensures compliance with current regulations. And I gather this is the NRC's position, although they can correct me. Is that they're saying, you know, 20.2002 requires that even in an agreement state that the generator where it's in a nuclear power plant has to get NRC permission to go with an alternative disposal site. And as we explained in the letter in 2012, we went through the five different scenarios and that included NRC regulated generator in agreement state. And even then the generator has to get NRC approval. So their view of nothing to see here is not that we're sticking with the 1986 regime. Their view is we're sticking with what we think we explained in 2012 and that we think is codified in and supported by 20.2002.
Well, again, Your Honor, 20.2002 doesn't say that. It's important to highlight the language here. So 20.2002 references otherwise authorized in the regulations in this chapter. Okay, so in other words, there is a door in 20.2002 that recognizes other sources of authorization. And again, that would be
not otherwise authorized in the regulations of this chapter to dispose of. And it's so again, yeah. this is applied to generators, not to the disposal sites. And I'm just, you know, reading the government's brief and trying to get your best answer to it, that their view is that there's nothing else that authorizes a generator to dispose of in an alternative facility. The 150.15 may authorize the site in an agreement state.
It doesn't make that distinction, Your Honor. The regulation says any person. And again, for decades, there in fact have been agreements between states and the NRC allowing for generators to dispose. I don't think the government disputes that. So there is a pathway for generators. There was never any distinction between generators and non-generators. It's any person, nor is there any such distinction made in the act itself, right? The act itself says, look, this is about, you know, state cooperation and, you know, enlisting states to do their part and have a say in the disposal of material that is very low risk, as this is. We're saying low level waste. It's a shorthand for very low level waste. So there's no such distinction that has been drawn. And if there were, the NRC could not have entered into those agreement state agreements in the first place. The NRC would not have said in 2012, the same year as this first, you know, clarification letter was issued, by the way, issued only to states, not to the regulated industry,
right,
would not have acknowledged Washington State's ongoing supervisory authority, regulatory authority over this, over the disposal in that of a generator. It's important that was in the context of renewing a generator's license. So there was a very clear framework. There was a very clear regulatory before, and now there's a regulatory after. Right. And there, if the NRC wants to change its position, that's OK, but it needs to do so pursuant to rule, regulation or order. So, again, so says the Atomic Energy Act, the commission's own regulations, the APA. You know, this is ultimately about, you know, kind of due process, small d.
Mr. Crowley, I have a question. It's not an essay question. It's a multiple choice question.
OK,
what is it that you filed to review? You petitioned for us to review.
What decision?
Well, what anything did you ask us to review? You filed a petition to review something.
I see. We asked you to review the NRC's determination that state approval is no longer sufficient for land disposal.
You need an order. What order did you ask us to review?
Well, that determination is embodied.
What action? I'll take it back. What action?
Yes, an action. Yes. Well, it's the action.
What's the date of the action? Let's start there.
I'm sorry. I missed your question, Judge.
What is the date of the action? I don't know what we're talking about.
The date of the action is September 2019.
Date,
yes.
No, that's a month. What's the date?
Oh, it's the letter from the NR. It's the letter.
From September 16, is that
yes,
it?
Yes, thank you.
That's a letter from the commission responding to
the petition
letter asking them to rescind the RIS, right?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. No, that's the response letter to that letter. That letter was in February.
That's what I meant to say.
Yes. Okay. Exactly.
The predicate for their sending that letter on September 16 was that you had asked them to rescind the RIS, and the RIS is the 2016 document that Judge Pillard's been talking about.
Not exactly, Your Honor. Not exactly, Your Honor. That letter, the September 16, 2019 letter, was the culmination of a policy process that the NRC put in motion, prompted by a protest from South Texas, the facility that was cited for.
Yes, I understand that. I understand that you're saying the letter is the culmination of a series of actions,
yes.
But the actions are, if I understand the letter, the actions are to do something based on the 2016 document, the RIS, that you would like them to repudiate.
It's not the
interpretation that you would like them to repudiate.
Yes, that's an important distinction, Your Honor. Thank you. It's the interpretation. It's not the IRS on its face. Again, we had and have no quarrel with the IRS on its face. It's important to draw the distinction between what the RIS says and how it was interpreted beginning in August of 2018. I'm sorry.
Let me just quote one passage from the RIS of 2016. Okay. This RIS, let's see, wait a minute. I got it right here. It's on page JA17. This RIS makes the clarification that any licensee's request for approval to dispose of licensed material under 20.2002 or the equivalent agreement state regs must be submitted to the regulatory authority that issued the license for use of the radioactive material. It's in the first full paragraph under summary of issue, second sentence, third sentence. Okay? Now that's what you're complaining about in the policy that you say has been restated or somehow came to fruition only in 2019.
Yes, Your Honor, that's our argument. That cryptic sentence contained in a document that says we are not changing the regulatory framework can't satisfy the APA, the AEA.
Okay, but as Judge Pillard pointed out, you might well have challenged it if you thought that. Now, there is an enforcement proceeding that's been filed, correct? And I presume all of these arguments will be made there.
It's not so easy as that. It's not so easy as that, Your Honor. And the reason is, in this context, enforcement is a serious business. What's called a minor violation is quickly escalated to a major violation. It's not the industry's practice to say, oh, well, you can enforce against us and we'll, you know, we'll see you in court. If the NRC
is- That's not preferable, but that's where you are, where one of your members is, I guess.
Well, but Your Honor, it's a circular argument we're responding to that the government's making here, that we're going to take a sentence out of context, out of the larger document it appears, and out of the larger regulatory framework understood by all parties, and say, okay, this sentence means something that it wasn't understood or didn't mean at the time. Why wouldn't the sentence say, we are hereby amending 150.10. We are hereby abandoning the agreement state regime. That's not what the RIS says.
Maybe,
what the RIS says
maybe is they should have done that. Maybe they should have had notice and comment rulemaking in 2016. Maybe they should have had a backfit analysis. They didn't do any of those things. And that may have been quite a faulty procedure, but you didn't challenge it.
But
now, reiterating it, you say, please say it ain't so, take it back. And they say, we're not taking it back. And you now try to say, out of we're not taking it back, we won't rescind it, to use the term you used, to make that into a reviewable event.
I think that we tried to, again, we didn't have a quarrel with this risk when it was written. Our quarrel is how it has been interpreted. And I can only imagine the government's argument if we tried to challenge
it. Can I back you up there? You say you didn't have a quarrel with how it was written.
Yes.
Did you consider it ambiguous or confusing?
Yes, we considered it confusing.
At the time.
But,
and then did you immediately follow up and say, wait, say the sentence Judge Ginsburg just read. Does that mean what we think it means? Or did you just sort of go with our reading of this is, we're going to focus on the language we like and say that this isn't meant to be a change. We're going to understand it this way and hope that works. That's what I'm trying to figure out. It seems like—
I hear your question.
Yes, it's at best, right, ambiguous as to what it was doing.
I guess I want to say two things, Judge. First of all, at the most, this cryptic, now very pregnant sentence, right, that is going to be used outside of the broader regulatory framework and this document taken as a whole and taken at face value. At the most, it might be read to say, going forward, indeed, the languages must be submitted on a going forward basis, that if there is a new generator or a new state or a new facility that wants to do, you know, to seek disposal, land disposal, on a going forward basis, it would seek that from the NRC. We think that it's unreasonable to say all existing agreement state agreements and the rule that they are moored to and the statute that rule is moored to are hereby wiped away. I mean,
so I'm having trouble with that because I do appreciate that there has not been model clarity and, you know, that there's been a little bit of a feeling of a kind of, you know, shell game of nothing to see here, nothing to see here, nothing to see here. And voila, at the end of the day, it's a different regime from the one that there was in 86. On the other hand, this at JA-17, where Judge Ginsburg was reading, it follows that sentence, for NRC issued licenses, the request should be made in accordance with the provisions that talk about communicating with the commission. For agreement state licensees, the request should be made directly to the agreement state. So it feels, I may be missing something, but it seems to be saying your hobnobbing with the agreement state is, your approval from the agreement state is not enough.
Maybe on a going forward basis, but how could this document—
Well, Mr. Cole, I can see how at the time you might read it that way or think of it that way, perhaps reasonably, perhaps not. I just have to be much more familiar with the context. But then the commission said to South Texas in 2018,
yes,
that this is a problem. South Texas, you haven't been complying with this.
Yes.
And then in August of 2018, South Texas asked for clarification, right? the NRC affirmed its position but declined to enforce. That was October 18. You know the situation now.
Oh, absolutely.
More than a year before there was a document that you sought to characterize as final agency action.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Your Honor. In 2018, to South Texas's surprise, the government relied on this document, apparently so. I mean, this became clear over time. But there's this back and forth, and South Texas's response is revealing. It said, you can't mean this 2016 RIS calls into question our existing longstanding approval from the state of Texas. It was that surprise
and
on the part of
the commission came and said, yes, that's exactly what we mean, but we're not going to enforce.
We would disagree. Not exactly, Your Honor. To its credit, the government said, we'll rethink this. The government, it's important. The government said, you're right. You have raised genuine questions about the clarity of the RIS. We are going to hold a public meeting. We are going to take some comment. We are going to,
That was in the answer to South Texas, was it? That came later, I believe.
No, both, Your Honor. At JA 32, the exact language was the NRC said, we are going to evaluate this issue generically to provide further clarity. So the government is conceding there is not clarity.
Well, one could, to be fair, read that as enforcement clarity, that they realize that with a shift and with whatever the practices are, that there's some question about how quickly and in what circumstances people have to come into compliance.
May I respectfully disagree?
For you to point out to an agency, as many, this can happen, I readily imagine, with other agencies, say it ain't so, you can't mean it. There's this huge reliance interest. And the agency might say, well, we do mean it. We hadn't thought about the reliance interest. We'll think about that now, too.
All of the above. What actually happened? Let me make sure I'm responding to both of your questions, which I think is a version of the same question, but you'll correct me if I'm wrong. South Texas protested. The agency said, you're right. We will provide further clarity. You have raised legitimate issues. You have caused us to evaluate the risk. That's what they said, to evaluate the risk. At JA 48, there's a meeting notice. What does it say? I'm quoting, discuss a path forward to address concerns with the risk. And lastly, importantly, JA 54, 55, 56, summaries of those meetings. And the language makes clear the agency, look, even if you think, which we strongly disagree with, that we could have, you know, sued on the basis of the 26, but even if the court were to conclude that, the agency reopened a policy process, ran a policy process to consider revisiting the risk. And then,
you know, that's not how they characterize it. They characterize it as information sessions and trying to be transparent and respond to the outcry, but not reopening a policy process.
Well, I don't want to quibble over words, Judge Pillard, but what they said is we're going to evaluate the issue generically and discuss a path forward to address concerns with the risk. Let me just back up. Any reasonable
I'm sorry. I don't see them saying, first you said that they're going to reevaluate the risk, and I don't see that in their letter. And then now you just said what they said. They evaluate the issue generically to provide further clarity. Mm-hmm. I don't see them saying anywhere that we're reevaluating the risk itself.
So I'm looking at JA 32, the only full paragraph at JA 32, the second sentence, the NRC is evaluating the issue generically to provide further clarity.
Right.
Yes, but in the previous
go ahead, Doug.
I'm sorry. They had said at the bottom of the penultimate paragraph, however, NRC authorization for South Texas to use these sites of this material is also required. Okay. So, I mean, they're adhering to their position.
Yes.
In regard to this particular enforcement action.
Yes, we agree.
We've raised some issues and we will think about those, but they're not in this case.
Well, they're sticking to their position. We agree, but they're also, this is to the government's credit. They're also saying to its credit, like you've raised some issues. We will work through them. I mean, the alternative is, okay, the whole industry is asleep at the switch. Every generator in an agreement state is asleep at the switch. Every state regulator is asleep at the switch. Again, this is regulation by gotcha. That's not what the AEA prescribes. The AE prescribes, the APA requires some process, some transparency, some notice. Give the industry a chance to weigh in. You can't put one sentence in a document that says this does not disturb the
regulatory. That sounds like a great challenge on the merits to the agency's decision. What we have to decide first and foremost, though, is when was that decision made?
It was made sometime between August 2018 and
I think under the Hobbs Act, you got to have an action that you're challenging, and as Judge Ginsburg started, you have to have a date.
Yes.
And so sometime between 2016, then you probably should have started in 2016 with a challenge, and then everything could have gotten cleared up quickly.
But you said between 2018.
Yes, with the citation, the commencement of the enforcement when the commission signaled, okay, maybe we got ahead of our skis. And yeah, the decision, the embodiment of the determination, the order for the Hobbs Act purposes is the letter response to the industry, right? That letter, by the way, was foreshadowed in the public meeting. They said, okay, we hear you. We will get back to you. I'm paraphrasing, but not loosely. We expect by the end of September to respond to industry's concerns. So naturally, the NRC sends an authoritative letter to the industry's group, my client, the petitioner, and says, here's our answer. So that easily satisfies Hobbs Act. There's lots of circuit law on a letter from an authoritative agency official that constitutes the culmination of an agency process is a Hobbs Act order.
Actually, your principal case you cited for that also had an enforcement letter. I think it was Barrick.
Barrick, yes. Appalachian Power, Valero. Yeah.
I wondered about why, Mr. Coley, the Institute didn't just seek a rulemaking, just petition for rulemaking, because wouldn't you have clear, I mean, couldn't you still do that? You have clear avenue for review from a denial of a petition to make the rule that you think you thought was in place. The agency denies that, and then off you go to court.
It sounds simple, Judge Billard, but in the meantime, there are enforcement risks. They are expensive. They raise reporting requirements. They implicate insurance arrangements, right? So the rulemaking process, even a pretty quick one, as the court's well aware, that is not an appealing avenue. I think you're right. As a formal technical matter, that has not been precluded. But the fact remains, we have a decision, and the agency has articulated a viewpoint that's inconsistent with the procedural requirements of the Atomic Energy Act. Run a process, give us a say, do something transparent, not this regulatory gotcha.
Colleagues, have any further questions?
Not now.
We'll give you some time on rebuttal, Mr.
Thank you.
Mr. Averbeck.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Andrew Averbeck from the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission on behalf of the United States and the NRC. This petition for review challenges the NRC's determination in 2019 not to rescind, at NEI's request, an interpretation of its regulatory authority that the agency staff formally announced in 2016 and had in fact been articulated as far back as 2012. I have to confess that I was somewhat surprised to hear from NEI's counsel that they actually have no quarrel with either the 2016 or the 2012 or the 2016 guidance. The fact of the matter is that those are mere interpretive rules that the staff—
Can I back you up? The decision not to rescind your position a final agency action? You just said they asked you to rescind it, and you said no.
Well, that's what they've identified in their petition.
I'm asking you, as a decision not to rescind a reviewable action under the Hobbs Act.
If it had appreciable legal consequences, it could constitute final agency action that's reviewable. But
it certainly does have appreciable legal consequences. That means they're clear, and they have to go for the industry-wide has to go forward now and change their application processes for waste disposal in a dramatic way that they hadn't before.
Well, that's what they say now, and they somehow suggested that they were somehow illuminated in that regard by virtue of the 2019 letter. But I point the court
to the 2019 decision not to rescind. Yes. Wait.
Sure.
Yes. So they've identified harms and appreciable legal consequences. I didn't hear you in your brief saying those are not appreciable legal consequences.
Well, I want to make clear that as an initial matter, any appreciable legal consequences that may result from the agency's interpretation don't come from the 2019 letter. And in fact, I would draw the court's attention to JA-42, which was the letter that NEI wrote to the NRC after this sequence of events that Mr. Crowley described. And the position that NEI is adopting here, this sudden illumination that, oh my gosh, now licensees who had previously existing arrangements are now going to have to comply with NRC requirements, NEI acknowledged that very circumstance back in February 28th, 2019. And this is on the bottom of page JA-42. And it wrote, quote, the interpretation provided in the RIS, regulatory information summary, requires, they actually emphasize the word requires, licensees that have obtained approval from an agreement state for alternate disposal of LLW to obtain approval from the NRC prior to continuing such disposals or risk enforcement.
I understand that. That was based not on the RIS itself, but on the subsequent enforcement action against South Texas. So,
well, I mean, the statement says the change, I'm sorry, respectfully, it says the changed interpretation provided in the RIS. Mm-hmm. So they fully understood the consequence of the RIS.
No, I think we just need to stop and be fair here. Okay, let's just be fair all around. I understand your arguments about the RIS. Did you dispute that prior to 2016, the longstanding established practice was that the agreement state provided the approval, assuming it's in the same state? That's all I'm talking about. The agreement state provided the approval for disposal of low-level waste. Do you dispute that?
I dispute that in as much as it suggests that it was prior to 2016. In 2012, the agency...
No, that was about interstate quite clearly. Well, you guys issued guidance in 2009 on low-level waste disposal processes. And that guidance said, for reactor licensees submitting 20.202 requests, if both the reactor and the proposed disposal facility are located in the same agreement state, typically the state regulator will perform the review of the request, not NRC staff. That's your 2009 guidance. So let's start with that question. As of 2009, was the practice that the agreement state provided the approval and not the NRC?
I would say that in certain some circumstances, that was the case.
No, what circumstances? Tell me what language in this, your guidance from 2009.
Well, what I'm trying to suggest is that candidly, there was a bit of a mess, and I don't deny that. But we've cited to two different Federal Register notices reflecting licensees in agreement states seeking NRC approval prior to 2012. I don't recall the exact dates. I believe one of them was 2010, one was 2005. And going
to
the
NRC. How many?
I'm sorry?
Two out of how many?
I don't know the denominator in that.
More than two.
It was more than two. We pointed to those two because they were published and the court could take judicial notice.
So, all right. And you just said at best you had a mess, but you had a 1986, I forget all these different names you have for these things, but a 1986 notice.
Right.
And then you had in the late 1980s, a proposed regulatory amendment that would do exactly what you now say the RIS did and was withdrawn. But an acknowledgement that you had to make any change to the 1986, the practice memorialized in 1986 through a regulatory process. And then you have this 2012 letter that comes along. Well, you got this 2009 guidance, which I don't think has been replaced until your 2020 guidance. Unless you can tell me you've had intervening guidance that changed that language and says the states are going to do it generally.
No, Your Honor, we embarked upon.
That was the guidance that they had. States are going to do
right.
So you had conflicting stuff all over the place. You had tried a regulation and then withdrawn it to make this very change. And then you have a 2012 letter that's talking really, at least as I read it, most fairly about interstate, which is why I limited my question to in-state. And then you've got this RIS, which has language that's been quoted that seems to say we're changing our position. But for an agency that had said we're going to try to do it through a regulation and we were withdrawing that and we need to do a regulation, and now to have this in the RIS, industry is confused. You might be right. You might be wrong. That's a merits issue, whether the 2016 RIS lawfully accomplished that change. And you've got language in there that seems to announce the change. But this seems rather, it seems rather odd to me that on issues of this importance, the NRC buries such a massive change in a sentence in an issue statement rather than a regulation, and then adds to that very issue statement, compliance with current regulations is strictly voluntary. The compliance with the risks ensure it'll be strictly voluntary on page JA18. I can't blame them for being entirely confused. I mean, does the NRC at least acknowledge this is not good government, how this has been done?
Your Honor, there are a number of things.
Strictly voluntary.
What we meant by
strictly voluntary.
I'll start with that. When the agency said it was strictly voluntarily, what it was referring to was the fact that 22001 sets forth a series of different ways in which a NRC licensee can dispose of low-level waste, one of which is to deliver to an authorized recipient under 22001A1. Then there's a list, and there are several enumerated methods that have been approved through notice and comment rulemaking. The sort of safety valve, if you will.
What the sentence says?
Well,
any action that licensees take to implement changes or procedures in accordance with the information contained in this risk ensures compliance with current regulations is strictly strictly voluntary.
Well, if I may finish, Your Honor, when it says it's strictly voluntary, what it's saying is you don't have to capitalize on the 22002 safety valve. You can use any of the things that the agency has previously evaluated through notice and comment.
That's not what it says. That's just not what it says at all.
But the point is that no license
get out of the backfitting. This is all to get out of backfitting. We wouldn't have any backfitting obligation if they were just going to use already approved forms of disposal. The only reason you're talking about backfitting is something must have changed, or someone might think something changed.
Well, right, and that's why at the beginning of that document of the regulatory information summary, the agency made clear that it was rescinding the prior guidance, that it was incorrect, and it was superseding the entirety of that document. And this attempt to sort of refashion it as only partial repeat, a partial superseding or partial repeal of the prior guidance, I think it isn't a fair characterization of what happened. The agency recognized that it provided inaccurate guidance and confusing guidance in the past. It endeavored in 2012 and then in 2016 to replace that guidance with something that was truer.
I don't think there's any way to say that you endeavored to be open, clear, and transparent in 2016, because you were, you know, coming and going in the same document.
I respectfully disagree with that, Your Honor, but I think that, as I made clear when I cited to page JA42, NEI understood the consequences of what had been done in 2016 when it said this new regulatory information summary requires, its language, us or our licensees who have these pre-existing arrangements.
It also says it's informational and pertains to a staff position that does not represent a departure from current regulatory requirements and practice.
It says that, Your Honor, and 2 points about that. Number one, the current regulatory practice was based on the 2012
letter about interstate. As to in-state.
But if I may, Your Honor, some of the, I believe the first scenario in the 2012 letter actually referenced an interstate situation. So while that was what was being discussed, and I think this is an important point here, we're not focused, the regulation and the statute, the regulatory basis for the agency's position doesn't depend on whether or not we're in an interstate or an intrastate
situation. They were supposed to discern this from a letter that wasn't, the regulated parties here were supposed to discern from a scenario in a letter to states, not to them, that was never published.
Well, Your Honor, that's
when you're saying the change happened in scenario four? That's how you openly and clearly and transparently change?
Well, Your Honor,
practice without bothering to change your guidance to industry?
If I may, Your Honor, there was continuing ambiguity post 2012, which is why the agency further attempted to clarify the record in 2016.
But then, so if there was continuing ambiguity between 2012 and 2016, then the current state would have been ambiguity and would have included, I think, countless, maybe not all, maybe there were two exceptions, but there would have been countless plants that were relying on their agreement states to approve low-level waste. Would you agree with me that that was the state of practice up to 2016, that that was going on?
Certainly the three licensees that NEI has provided affidavits from were subject to that. I'm not aware of there being any
really
more.
NRC, how many applications did NRC get between 2012 and 2016 to approve low-level waste in an agreement state?
Your Honor, candidly, I don't know the answer to that. But what I do know...
If you were getting flooded with them, you would have known that.
Well, I can't suggest to you that we were getting flooded with them.
And your guidance at the time told them, don't bother coming to us. It's not for NRC staff to approve.
Right, which is why we endeavored to provide further guidance in 2016 and to remove any existing confusion that may have continued to exist. I wanted to make the fundamental
point. You really think this was the clearest you could have said it?
I suppose not.
We're not departing from current regulatory practice. We're not departing from current practice.
If I were to go back 5 years in time, perhaps I would have written it differently. But what we're talking about here is a position that NEI understood, that NEI understood the consequences of, and that fundamentally stems...
Let's not put words in your friend's mouth there. It didn't understand the consequences, at least before the 2018 enforcement action.
Well, okay, I don't necessarily agree with that.
And the company there, South Texas, was surprised.
It may well have been. I don't know.
So much for your clarity.
Can I ask a slightly different question? Which is, you know, I think in your brief at an abstract level, you do a helpful job of distinguishing between what's involved in regulatory approval on sending generator side and the regulatory approval of the receiving disposal facility side. I mean, it seems to me that that's fundamental to your position, that these are two separate functions, or at least can be. And in the view of the commission, it's important to, when NRC licensed generators are involved, it's important to keep them separate, and that the sending side, just for shorthand, is not delegated to agreement states. So I understand that in a sort of abstract sense. And, you know, for its part, the Institute refers to the commission's new interpretation requiring duplicative NRC approval. And then I thought it was very helpful. Mr. Crowley today said all he's concerned about is the, what I refer to for shorthand as the dump, you know, putting the stuff in the ground. Can you just in somewhat more concrete terms explain what the distinct inquiries are, you know, where under the 2016 regime, where the NRC is looking at the generator's permission to use an alternate site, and the agreement state is looking at the alternate site's eligibility. What are they, what's going on? What are they regulating? What are they looking at? How do they differ? In a really functional, practical sense.
Okay, I'll start with the proposition that the NRC is not regulating what Your Honor refers to as the dump. That is not an NRC licensee, at least in agreement states. And so the NRC isn't somehow taking away jurisdiction from agreement states to regulate the place of the dump, the actual depositing of the material into the ground. Those are all decisions that the states remain free to make consistent.
But not the putting it in, not the lining, not the supervision of it, not the freedom or not from water. Like, so
those continue to be within the state jurisdiction. Right,
so
but what the NRC, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Your Honor.
No, I interrupted you. I just
What I'm trying to get at is this idea that under 10 CFR Part 20, which is applicable to all NRC licensees, including those who are licensed under Part 50, Part 50 being the one where all the nuclear power plants have received licenses from the NRC, Part 20 requires NRC licensees, including nuclear power plants, to submit a plan for procedures to be employed for the sort of post-handoff disposal of low-level waste. And the reason for that is that the NRC doesn't want material transported off-site without understanding that there is a plan that has been previously evaluated and approved by the NRC, either through notice and comment rulemaking or through at least understanding what the plan is. The NRC wants to make sure that—
So you refer to procedures, you refer to packaging and transportation, you refer to the method by which they seek to dispose, you refer to the handling of waste before it becomes subject to agreement state authority, and you distinguish between the disposal method and the disposal itself. So what is in the former category in all of those dyads? What is the procedures that the NRC needs to supervise before the low-level radioactive waste is at the dump?
Well, the NRC has to understand what the radioactive dose of the underlying material is. It has to understand the time it's going to take for this material to actually be disposed of, as a function which will dictate in turn how much exposure employees or the public may have to this waste. It needs to understand—
Can I just clarify?
You mean in transit?
Are you talking about in transit or at the dump itself?
In transit and up to the point where it is accepted for disposal by—
Well, that's transit.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, it's transit, but keep in mind that we're going back.
Isn't transit already regulated?
It is.
And isn't packaging already regulated?
Sure, but this is part of the NRC's, what it refers to as its defense in depth approach to making sure that all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed.
So what the point is, all right, so I'm very simple on this. So I've got a barrel of this very low level waste sitting on my nuclear plant site, and I've done everything lawfully in packaging it up consistent with regulations, and it qualifies as low level waste. There's no dispute about that. So the packaging, the definition of low level waste is already addressed and been resolved. The packaging is compliant with existing regulations. I'm using an approved transportation system to the dump. So tell me exactly what again it is that you're regulating under 20.
Well,
are you asking them to— I'm really confused. Are you asking them to document that it's low level waste, to document that they're using the right container, to document that they're doing the right transportation? It's just a documenting the regulations you already impose, or is there something else when it goes on the NRC approved truck and drives in the NRC approved way to this agreement state approved dump?
Well, we want to understand what they're going to do with it once it gets to the dump. For example, are they going to open—
Right, so this is where I'm very confused. So I thought you said once it gets to the dump, the state takes it. I'm sorry, Judge Billett, I don't mean to jump into your question. I'm just very confused. What do you mean when it gets to the dump? I thought you said the state took care of that.
The state regulates that. Certainly the NRC has a role to understand what exactly is going to happen, and it's within its—
At the dump.
Yes, and again, it's not—
I thought you already cleared all that when you license someone to be an agreement state. Don't you go through all that already?
When we license someone to be an agreement, for lack of putting aside the nomenclature, essentially yes, mm-hmm. But we, as Part 20 licensees, and this is part of the legislative rules that are in place that all NRC licensees must comply with, they still need to comply with 22,002 so that the NRC, before it just simply authorizes waste to be driven off to some out-of-state—
Your language keeps changing. I don't want to talk about out-of-state. I only want to talk about in-state. Don't get me out. Okay, I don't want to—
All right, I didn't mean to qualify. Okay. Our position applies in-state and out-of-state.
Right, so on in-state, I don't know what procedures you're regulating, because you said it's not at the dump. It's the the plant's procedures and getting the stuff to the dump. But then your answers have been all about, well, what's the dump going to do with it? But that's what you said the state's regulating, and you are not policing. So you can understand why industry is profoundly confused here.
I can understand their reluctance to be subject to dual regulation, but respectfully, I don't think that that's what's going on here. The agency is simply saying, look, before we can authorize anything to leave a site, and whether it goes in-state or out-of-state, we want to understand what you plan to do with it. And we want to understand either—
dispose of it at an agreement state approved. I mean, has there been a problem that they haven't been taking it to agreement state approved locations?
No, but I'd like to attribute
that to— the agreement states haven't been doing what they said they would do at their disposal sites?
Well, we have, I can't speak mm-hmm. as to whether or not there's been an individual problem or not, but I'd like to attribute the lack of problems to the fact that we have regulatory requirements in place saying, hey, look, before this goes up—
But you didn't, your compliance manual didn't require any of this. So it hadn't been done before maybe 2018?
Well—
2016?
We're trying to improve our processes. I don't think that's a bad thing.
Change your processes.
I'm sorry,
I don't mean to interrupt Judge Pillar's question, but I don't understand with my barrel what it is that you're approving under 2002. What is it that you are approving that you haven't already approved by authorizing the agreement state to handle the disposal stage?
Well, the point is that all of the other methods in 2001 have been approved by the agency through notice and comment and rulemaking. When a licensee tries to use the safety valve of 22002, this is something that the NRC won't have previously considered. And the agency is simply saying, just like all the other provisions—
Didn't you consider it when you agreed with an agreement state that they're in charge of disposal? I thought you told Judge Pillar that you were not regulating the disposal site, but that was for the state.
We are not, but we want to understand what is going to be done, what is proposed to be done.
By whom?
By the licensee.
By the licensee at the disposal site?
Yes.
What do they do?
Information as opposed to regulation. It's saying before we sign off on the facilities in our primary regulatory ambit, before we sign off on them passing this off to a state supervised dump, we want some communication about why the state is satisfied that this is going to be secure. Some of the information that they're in charge of, but we just want that information. And also, but that's not the only thing. There's also, as you say, questions about packaging, transport, timing, and the like of the low-level nuclear waste. So there's
I think that's a fair characterization.
I mean, by whom?
By the generator, as I understand it. Can I ask you on the...
I'm sorry, is it timing by... Are you talking about timing, how long it takes
to... When it's going to happen, how long it's going to take.
What's the it? I'm sorry, I'm getting confused.
The transportation, the amount of time that the material might be exposed to the air, things like that.
So the amount of time exposed to the air, you mean in the transportation process or do you mean in the dump?
I mean in the dump, but I also mean how long it's going to take to transport it from point A to point B, things like that, which have to be
worked out. So you are regulating the dumps now too?
I wouldn't suggest that, Your Honor. We want to understand what's happening before we authorize shipment offsite. If necessary, communicate with the state authorities to make sure that we're all on the same page. But
will the plant know how long the people operating the disposal site take to dispose of it?
The procedures would contemplate
that information
or when something's going to happen, for sure.
Wouldn't the state have that information? They're the one that licensed the disposal site.
There have to be procedures. And to be clear, Your Honor, there are the facility, the disposal facility is licensed by the state, but they don't necessarily know what their customers, for lack of a better word, how they necessarily intend to operate. And there's
each individual in the state Okay, so what you're addressing here is a problem that states are not policing their disposal sites well enough, and so you want information from the plants about how the disposal site that's been licensed by the state in an agreement state is actually doing it?
Well, I wouldn't characterize it as the agency addressing a problem. I think it's preventing a problem so that it understands what is going to happen to this waste.
At the disposal site?
Yes, at the disposal site.
Okay. Sorry, Judge Pillard, I interrupted you. I apologize.
So what's your response to Mr. Crowley's point? I had taken you to be relying really quite significantly on 20.2002. And Mr. Crowley says, well, but that's only half the story. That really doesn't apply here at all. What we're really, I think if I'm remembering correctly, he said, what we're really looking at here is 150.15. And I had read that as actually not exempting this activity, but I'm a bit of a novice in this area. So can you explain why you think that his answer is not problematic from your perspective?
Yes. And I actually, I'm glad the court raised that, because that's an issue I would like to address. I don't think it's correct to say that NRC licensees are exempt pursuant let me begin that sentence again. I don't think it's correct to say that any NRC licensee is exempt from NRC regulations merely because they happen to be in agreement states. And that's effectively the import of Mr. Crowley's argument about 150.10. And in particular, nuclear power plant licensees, which is what we're talking about here, actually don't fall within the scope of the 150.10 exemption, because they will necessarily, and I'm quoting here from 150.10, they will possess special nuclear material in quantities, it says here, not sufficient. The people who get exemption are not sufficient, the ones who have it not sufficient to form a critical mass. Nuclear power plants have special nuclear material in quantities sufficient to form a critical mass. And what that means is that they're not somehow exempt from NRC requirements. And what that further means is that they are therefore subject to all of the requirements set forth in 10 CFR Part 20, including the need to comply should they choose voluntarily to pursue an alternate means of disposal, the requirements of 20.2002. And so there's no need for the agency to somehow claw back jurisdiction over nuclear power plants. Nuclear power plants are subject to NRC regulation.
I was just going to say, I gather incorrectly referred to one. I think Mr. Crowley mentioned both 150.10 and 150.15. And is the waste we're talking about here covered in 150.15? Non-exempt specifically, I mean, A4 or...
We're not invoking the clawback provisions of 150A4. But to be perfectly clear here, we don't feel the need to somehow suggest that that the disposal of waste is part and parcel of plant operations. It's the need to comply with Part 20 exists irrespective of someone is or is not is or is not a power plant. The need to comply with Part 20 stems from the fact that you as an NRC licensee and someone who is not exempt under 150.10 need to comply with all applicable provisions of 10 CFR, including 10 CFR Part 2001 and 2002. And to really drive it home, 10 CFR 2001 says a licensee, meaning any kind of NRC licensee, including a nuclear power plant licensee, shall dispose of waste only, it says, in accordance with any of the enumerated methods, one of which happens to be 20.2002. But an NRC licensee is bound by that provision, and that provision...
Is one of those approved methods operating within an agreement state?
is an approved method of disposal.
All the things that they can do. Yes, for only, because the agreement state provision statutorily only applies to very, you know, low level, low risk aspects of nuclear material. No one's suggesting anything that's remotely risky goes out of your hand.
Well, I don't think that's the point of your question, but I'm not sure that that's a fair characterization. So,
what's not a fair characterization? No, please educate.
I don't think it's fair to say that the mere fact that it's low level waste doesn't mean that there are not hazards associated with it.
I didn't say that at all. I just said that the agreement state program, as I understand it, is the only thing as to which the NRC will, in the NRC's word, discontinue its regulatory authority is specified low level risk aspects of nuclear power production. Right?
Okay.
And discontinue is the NRC's word, correct? Discontinue regulatory authority as just to those aspects. Is that correct?
That is correct. And that's why
include disposal, allowing agreement states consistent with your 2009 guidance, which has been in existence at least till 2020, allowing the agreement states to approve the disposal of inland low level radioactive waste in state. Was that?
Yes, Your Honor. And that's, I don't think I'm disagreeing with you when I say that the agency has not undermined or prevented states from maintaining full authority.
No, I was responding to your argument that you hadn't given up any regulatory authority and you weren't clawing anything back, but then your own verb is discontinue regulatory authority. Obviously, right. The cabin is very narrow, but discontinue sounded to me like you were.
Well, the sense in which the NRC's authority is discontinued means that it does not regulate the recipients of nuclear waste, the facilities at which
that's not what your waste may be disposed of. But that's not what your 2009 guidance said.
Well,
approval of for purposes of 2002 requests, the state regular will perform the review of the request and not NRC staff for reactor licensees.
Well, again,
the disposal place says for reactor licensees submitting 20.202 requests. The reactor proposed facility are in the same state and the same agreement state. The state regulator will perform the review.
Well, that's why the agency endeavored to correct that guidance, Your Honor, which is because
that till 2000, till last year.
Well, right. And that's why, in fact, the agency responded to both NEI and to South Texas and said, we are endeavoring to provide additional guidance as to what to do, having recognized that the prior guidance had not necessarily provided all the accurate information. Now, that's not what's at issue anymore, though. What's at issue and right now is whether or not in 2019, when it said, no, our interpretation of our own legislative rule is correct, whether or not that constitutes final agency action.
Right. But, can I say one other thing, too? When I know with Texas, and there was a statement there that you would, because of all the confusion, would exercise enforcement discretion. And so does that mean when you exercise enforcement discretion, I assume that means there's not going to be any kind of penalty or write-up, but I assume they still are expected to come into compliance going forward?
Well, what the letter to South Texas said was, we won't seek any kind of enforcement for past conduct. Mm-hmm. And until we put forward this guidance, we won't likewise, we'll allow you to permit to continue to dispose of waste in accordance with the existing arrangement with the state of Texas. The implication, I think, from that letter is after the issuance of guidance, now you've got to comply.
Oh, okay. So then there wasn't actually a regime requiring them to change their behavior until the guidance issued. So in 2018, they still didn't even have to change. Was it just South Texas or all of industry wasn't expected for in-state disposal, wasn't expected to change until you had the new guidance after your meeting and everything?
We expected the licensees to comply. And really, the guidance and the specific thing one of the specific things we wanted to address with respect to licensees like South Texas was what to do with licensees like South Texas that had, in fact, previously obtained an authorization from the state. We've been notified about three. And I have to confess, one of them we only learned about through this litigation, meaning Arizona. But the remaining licensees have been aware of this obligation since 2016, at least. I think, as was pointed out before, they didn't sue. And in fact, what I've heard is that they actually don't disagree with the underlying logic of the agency's position. And I think it is correct to say that had they disagreed with it, we probably would have been in court. It's strange to me that here we are 3 years after the issuance of the 2016 regulatory information summary, that NEI is advancing the interests of three of its members. When it actually
does actions against anybody.
And the existence of a violation was communicated to Energy Northwest in, I think it was 2019. And that's referenced in the briefs. To my knowledge, that's the only one.
So Mr. Avrak, just zooming back and looking at this at a much more simple level, the commission has acknowledged that its interpretation of 20.2002 has shifted, at least from the interpretation announced in the 1986 information notice, which it refers to in a 2016 regulatory issue summary as incorrect. But at the same time, the commission has said that none of the particular communications has created any new legal obligations for NRC licensees. And is that because no enforcement action has yet been taken, or what? I mean, it seems like if the interpretation has shifted, there is a new legal obligation. And when and how did that crystallize?
I think the clearest answer I can pose to that or put to that question is that the obligation itself doesn't stem from the NRC's staff's interpretation of the regulation. It certainly, if licensees voluntarily choose to comply, that's their own decision.
The obligation stems from the regulation, but the agency had an authoritative interpretation of the regulation in 86 that it didn't apply to in the way that you've now said it does.
Now, meaning sometime between 2012 and now. Right. Yes, I agree with that.
And so the question is, given that, I mean, maybe the position is, well, the 1986 interpretation was wrong and invalid, but nonetheless, it was something that had some operative force. And so if there's a change, what's really confounding is that the agency has both said, yes, we've changed our interpretation, but at the same time, it said nothing to see here in 12, in 16, in 18, in 19. And the nature of the nothing to see here has shifted, but it's sort of like, when did the agency say, okay, rubber's hit the road here, folks, you know, let's bracket the enforcement issue, but you've got to do this. Like, has that yet been done?
Well, I think the 2016 information summary accomplishes that task when it says that NRC licensees, as distinct from agreement state licensees, have to go to the NRC in accordance with 22,001 and 22,002 in order to get approval for alternate disposal methods. I understand that we communicated, the NRC, I think, had a sense that this was public knowledge in 2012. I understand Judge Millett's concern that perhaps it could have been stated more clearly and more expansively to both intrastate and interstate situations.
Mr. Crowley's client might have had an opportunity to say, okay, you should have done a backfit or you should have done notice and comment or whatever, but that's time barred in your view.
Yes, I would agree with that. Now, there are certainly other opportunities for for those particular clients to contest the agency's interpretation or to seek judicial review. But it's odd here to write a letter to the NRC in 2019 and have us simply say, no, we meant what we said in 2016, and to have that suddenly be the impetus for judicial review under the Hobbs Act. And I want to emphasize this too, because the Hobbs Act has specific qualifications on what this court is empowered to hear that tie back to Section 189A of the Atomic Energy Act. And in particular, the only avenue that NEI could get this court's jurisdiction right now is if what it's reviewing is a final order in a rulemaking proceeding. And I understand that the court has said that, okay, when the NRC issues a legislative rule, that those legislative rules fall within the meaning of a final order in a Section 189 proceeding. But all the agency has done here is adhere to a previously existing interpretive rule. And
so under that theory, would a challenge to the 2016 RIS have qualified for Hobbs Act review? Because you said that was just adhering to 2012. So would a challenge to 2016 RIS have?
Your Honor, the agency's position and the government's position is that an interpretive rule is not cognizable in a Hobbs Act proceeding. I want to make clear.
I just want a yes or no answer. Would a challenge to the 2016 RIS have qualified for Hobbs Act review?
I don't think it would, but I want to.
RIS doesn't qualify under the Hobbs Act.
In my view, yes. I do want to just make this qualification, though, that there is a case from 1982 entitled New England Power Company versus NRC, which purported to challenge what it called an interpretive rule. Didn't really assess jurisdiction, but when one does a search of previous cases, it is, in fact, analyzing an interpretive rule. I don't think that's proper under the Hobbs Act, and the Third Circuit has held otherwise in the case of New Jersey versus NRC. But I think that
just to be clear, that the agency's position is that the only way to challenge this change, I think, would be through an actual enforcement proceeding. Is that right?
An enforcement proceeding, the court referenced the petition for rulemaking, which is an avenue too.
That's a pretty hard avenue. Okay.
I don't disagree that the standard of review was favorable.
Right. I just want to be clear that your position, because I had misunderstood from your brief, I had thought you said they should have challenged the 2016 RIS, but now I understand you've clarified for me, thank you, that you don't think that could have been challenged either under the Hobbs Act.
Fair enough.
Sorry.
Let me make sure I've caught up with this then. So, Mr. Averbeck, so you're saying the only things that are challengeable are a product of a notice and comment rulemaking or the final order in an enforcement proceeding?
In this particular context, yes. Certainly an adjudicatory decision that the agency makes, which we see all the time in licensing proceedings, are subject to Hobbs Act review as well. But the judicial review provisions under Section 189B of the Hobbs Act are tied back to that which is set forth in Section 189A. And Section 189A is limited to proceedings of three or four different types, one of which is a final order in a proceeding issuing or modifying a rule or regulation. And the language that the Act uses is dealing with the activities of licensees. So a final order in a rulemaking proceeding, and which I think is appropriately read to include legislative rules like 20-2001 or 20-2002, but not interpretive rules, would be reviewable, as would be a denial of a petition for rulemaking.
Right.
I have just one question.
Coming out of an adjudication.
Yes.
Why does everything take so long?
Can the court be more specific?
There's a reference in each of the communications to the regulated community and to the states that the agency sort of hopefully says, oh, but we're going to issue something. We're going to clear this up. you know, forthcoming is more guidance. And then years go by, for example, at JA 14, in order to inform licensees and interested stakeholders, this is the 2012, you know, specific guidance is under development. This will be shared once it's been finalized. And 4 years go by, and then there's the 2016. And then 2016 talks about, I think similarly, further clarification. Anyway, you get the picture. And then, and then there's a meeting, and they just sort of keep saying, like, we're going to think about this. And it just, years and years go by. And so I just thought there was something about the industry or about what's happening in the interim that isn't apparent to, from the picture.
I can't necessarily give a comprehensive answer as to why things take the length of time they do. One thing I can point to, though, is that the NRC has actually endeavored here to be, to improve its processes, to listen to interested parties. And, you know, one of the things we point out in our brief is that when NEI wrote this letter, the agency said, hey, you know what, we'd like to get the views of interested parties. And yes, I think that's a desirable means of governing. But the flip side of it is that it can take time to arrange this, to hear what licensees have to say, and not just licensees, but other stakeholders might have to say. And regrettably, the process may take months, years, and we find ourselves in a situation where we're in. But I do think that the agency has endeavored to fix a problem. It began that in 2012, when it realized that there was a mismatch between what licensees were doing under 2002 and what some of its original legal analysis had suggested. And since 2012, it has been endeavoring to issue as much clarity as it can about what it expects of licensees. And I certainly think that as of 2016, the regulated community was on notice that as an NRC licensee, if you want approval to do this, you have to go to the NRC rather than to agreement states.
My colleagues have any more questions? All right, we've kept you up a long time, Mr. Averbeck. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, and Mr. Cully, we'll give you 2 minutes of rebuttal. I think that's what you reserve.
Yes, thank you. So first to disposal, I'd like to draw attention to, this is in response to Judge Pillard's question. It's important that disposal is defined under the AEA itself. We cite this at page 9. The language is, the term disposal means the permanent isolation of low-level waste pursuant to the requirements established by the NRC under applicable laws or by an agreement state, if such isolation occurs in such agreement state. So there's no question, the regulation, of course, is consistent, but the statute itself defines disposal to be
something. What's the site for that?
Sure, it's the same statute. It's 42 U.S.C. 2021 little b sub 7.
Okay, thanks.
As my clock is rapidly, I'm gonna do speed bullets here. With respect to your question, Judge Millett, about footnote 4 of the government's brief, those are not two exceptions. Both of those exceptions involve interstate arrangements. These are consistent with our view. It's no surprise that, you know, California, an agreement state, disposing in Ohio, not an agreement state. There were questions about that. So our beef here is the narrow one, intrastate disposal. And there's no question that intrastate disposal is governed by agreement state agreements. I want to correct something that, with due respect, I think the government misstated or overstated. 22002 is not the regulatory framework here. Yes, there are many parts of Part 20, of course, that govern reactors, of course. But low-level land disposal is not one of them. Instead, it is 150.10. 150.10 says if you are in an agreement state and the NRC has consummated an agreement, you know, again, a robust process, you can dispose pursuant to state approval only.
But only if you have quantities not sufficient to form a critical mass, and the commission says that's not what we're talking about here.
No, it's definitely what we're talking about here. Critical mass, the NRC, critical mass, this is serious stuff, hot stuff. This is not left to the states. Look, the NRC doesn't have to give the states permission to regulate disposal sites. The states already have that. What they're disavowing is regulatory authority over low-level waste disposal, by definition, that's not critical mass. We're talking about protective clothing and, you know, soil and sediment and algae. It's not, this is, you know, as in the scheme of things, this is not at the core of NRC's jurisdiction and never has been. If, with the court's permission, I'd just like to kind of sum up. So there's a right-hand, left-hand problem here, and I don't want to bash on the NRC. It's a good commission. The agency, you know, generally speaking, the industry has a good relationship with it, but they're proceeding not in a coordinated way. It's not just the 2009 guidelines. On the agency's website today, it says, we disavow regulatory jurisdiction pursuant to agreement, state agreements. That's what it says today. So there's just a lack of coordination going on, you know, within the agency, and industry's confused. The AEA is the relevant standard here. It says, if you're going to claw back, if you're going to reclaim, you do so through process. And you know, something that is titled a summary, summarizing something that's titled a clarification, all of which on the substance speaks to interstate arrangements, and we have no dispute, that is not good enough under the AEA or the APA or the BACBIT rule.
But let me ask you, I'm having a little bit of a trouble grasping where the disagreement is, in the sense that Mr. Averbach says, we're not talking about putting it in the ground. You're saying we're only talking about putting it in the ground. Do you disagree that the commission can retain regulatory jurisdiction to look at and sign off on how the NRC licensees plan to package, to transport, and choose which authorized facility they're sending stuff to in the case of an alternate site that the state will sign off on? They just want to know about, because alternate site is by its nature more ad hoc, they want to know, what did the state sign off on? They're not going to second guess it, but they just want to know.
So I want to make sure I'm tracking the court's question. So transportation packaging, yes, there's no disagreement. The alternate site, in the real world, what we're talking about is municipal sites, RCRA sites, right? Sort of, right. So it's, I don't believe the government is arguing in this case, they just want to know. They are saying, we have reclaimed authority over the disposal, over disposal, because they have already ceded to the states. This continues, is not only the word of the regs, it's the word of the statute. They have already ceded regulatory authority over dumping in the hole to the states. So my client is unfamiliar with this distinction between disposal and disposal procedure, and the government's brief, with due respect, it doesn't provide citations for that distinction. So I don't know what, you know, I can't speak to what that might mean, but we don't agree to your question that the NRC just wants to know or has a authority over, you know, what I'm going to call turning the shovel over, and they have given that authority up, again, only in agreement state, you know, situations, of course, because they have decided that state law, state regulations, often promulgated in connection with the agreement state agreement, are good enough. And there's no reason to think they are not. And the NRC is not arguing that they're not. Have I been responsive?
Yeah, I'm a little bit confused about, I have to say, what the commission is claiming and what it's not claiming with respect to what goes on from, with respect to what's anticipated to go on at the dump.
We share that uncertainty.
Right. Are there any further questions? All right. Thank you to both counsel. We kept you both way over your time, and we had lots of questions and needed a lot of information. So we're grateful to both of you for your assistance. The case is submitted.